Welcome to another episode of Africa Asia Podcast. Just as a recap, I had indicated that I'm doing my PhD in tax law, and I'm looking at the taxation of the digital economy within Africa and focusing on two African countries. That's mainly Kenya and Nigeria, but I'm also feeding onto information from what other countries that have digital service tax are doing. So like the UK has a digital service tax. And this is at the point where I'm recording this podcast, which is March 2024. So quite a lot is changing and really fast. So at the point that someone is listening to this, this information might have been overtaken by events. But the topic that I wanted to discuss is somewhat general. So when I started doing my research and writing about taxing the digital economy in Africa, to my mind, my starting point was that what African countries need to do is that they need to come up with tax rules within the Africa Union. Yeah. So, you know, like how the European Union, they have specific tax rules that will, that govern the union. Yeah. So there's, in fact, like for the digital services, the European Commission has been having different ideas of how to tax the digital economy, including if you have significant digital presence in an European country, then there was a suggestion to have a digital tax. And then they had or something that was like, I forget the exact name, but it was like a one-stop shop. I think that's what it was called, where instead of registering for tax in every single European country, what you were required to do was you just needed to register that one place, and then the European Union itself would know who needs to get what and who needs to be repaid what. So, for instance, if it's Google, Google is earning advertising income throughout Europe, yeah? And by advertising income, I mean that someone is running an ad on Google. Then what happens is that Google would only have been required to register under the one point. And then what would happen is that, let's say the advertisement was run by someone in France and they were targeting someone in Germany to buy specific things from France. So then what would happen is that the advertiser who paid Google is in France, but the people who are being targeted are in Germany, and the sales of this person advertising in France would happen in Germany. I hope you see like different ways in which people are playing a part. So what would have been done is that this money that has been earned in France through advertising, the European Commission would have found a way of how Germany was supposed to get a part of it, because you see, it's people who are resident in Germany who are being targeted by adverts by Google, which are being paid for from France. So that's how the arrangement was working. But I've read somewhere that the uptake hasn't been as good. And as you can imagine, I don't think any digital businesses are too keen on overly complying, because you can get away with it, yeah? And I think within the digital space and the digital economy, I think the key to paying taxes going forward will be voluntary compliance. Like, there are so many loopholes. There are so many ways you can escape being detected by any tax laws of any country, that the only way that the future will work in collecting taxes from digital businesses is going to be through voluntary disclosure and through payment of those taxes in a voluntary way. So, like, if you think about it, right now, someone pays for an advert on YouTube. This person is, let's say, in Uganda, and their adverts, they have chosen the location where this advert should be shown. Let's say they decide to target someone in Nigeria. So, when Google earns this income, it's really it's up to them to decide that we're going to declare this income in Uganda, or the income that we earned from the payment that was made in Uganda. If they fail not to, it's really difficult for the Ugandan authorities now to be able, one, to enforce, because what the traditional enforcement measures would have been that you either go and freeze the accounts of Google in your country. Most likely, Google has no accounts, bank accounts in Uganda, so you can't freeze it. So what is your other option? To seize assets. What assets does Google have in Uganda? So you see, in short, what I'm saying is that the future of compliance by the digital businesses is going to be voluntary. It's when these businesses decide, you know what, we are earning enough revenues from these countries that we need to comply. But in any case, now this is the focus of our discussion today, that what has happened globally is that tax authorities, bodies, international bodies have realized that maybe the digital businesses are not too keen to comply. And understandably so, because one of the complexity of tax laws, Google will be trying to comply in each of the African countries, in each of the European countries. And I mean, with each different country, there will be rules. So the complexity of it makes it them not too keen for digital businesses to comply. So anyway, what happened was that the OECD, and what is the OECD? Just go to any AI app, just type in what is the OECD. But simply what it is the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And it has been around for quite a while. It consists of around, I'll say 38 countries, yeah? And most of them are European and the US. Not to be surprised that there's no African country that features in that list. So, anyway, what happened is that the OECD started a project called the Base Erosion and Profit Shifting Project. And what we're trying to do is that we're trying to look for, to seal loopholes that businesses are exploiting in eroding the tax base. And not to be complex, but the tax base is basically that if you're supposed to be taxed on, let's say, $1,000, there are ways that you can make sure as a business that you're not taxed, that $1,000 is not taxed. And what you do is that you erode that $1,000, and that is the base that you're eroding. In short, what would have been the amount taxable, you do things to make it diminish, yeah, reduce it. And a basic way of reducing it is claiming expenses against that $1,000. Say I've made $1,000, but I incurred expenses, let's say, for training, for research, for employees, that came to $800. So you can only tax me on $200. That is basically allowed. But what businesses really have found a way of doing is literally eroding that base so much by shifting profits out of countries. That's where the OECD was coming from, and that's how that project started, and that's when the conversation about taxing the digital economy started. And that was not too long ago. Well, it's not too recent either, because it was like between 2011, 2015, and by the time the action points by OECD were being published on how to address these things. And ever since to today, which is like, let's say, from 2015 to right now in 2024, that is like 9 years down the line, the conversation is still going on, the confusion is still as great as ever. And even I, as I'm doing research on my PhD in this, there's really no clear answer of how do we tax the digital economy, yeah? So anyway, what the OECD came up with different options, you know, like first, the beginning point was to identify what are these digital businesses, because there are different models of digital businesses, like Amazon and eBay. Those are e-commerce platforms. Then there is search engines like Google. And then there is the social media platforms, X, there is Facebook, there is Instagram. So there's the social media platforms. How do you tax income that is being earned by such platforms? And the platforms have since grown and grown and grown, because we know what people have been doing is businesses have been looking for ways of just, you know, not being detected to pay tax. Yeah. So for instance, people like Microsoft, use Microsoft. Initially, what would happen is that if you needed to buy Microsoft software, like let's say Word and Excel, and you know the bundle, what you'd have done was that you'd have bought a CD that you insert on your laptop, and then what would happen is that you'd load this thing. So what has happened with time is that Microsoft went and decided, you know what, you can download them, yeah? So you pay a certain amount and download them. So how in Kenya, people who are downloading this software from Microsoft, how will they be taxed? How would the Kenya Revenue Authority be able to detect that someone has actually downloaded this, they have paid through their, let's say, their debit card for this amount, and therefore we should tax Microsoft on this income because it's being accrued or derived from Kenya? That's one difficulty. And then it even within these 9 years, it has become so complex that right now, what Microsoft is doing is that now you no longer even have to buy and keep it forever. Now they charge you a subscription fee for like Office 365. So Office 365, what you do is that you pay an annual subscription fee. So now the model has even evolved to become a subscription service. You think of anything and see how much it has evolved. It started with Amazon shipping to you hard copy books. Then it went to the book being converted to Kindle and you could buy a Kindle. And then it has gone to the point where now you can actually even get an audio book. Yeah. So it has gone more and more. Even what was a hard copy thing or a good has been converted and taken the nature of something that you can now download. So how would the Kenya Revenue Authority be able to tax these people who are downloading books from different sites that are giving these packages? And even let's even go further. And it started off with you actually paying school fees and going to an actual class if you needed to study. Now it has gotten to the point where I can log into a class online and I can pay my fee online. Yeah. So how does someone actually see that this is the fee that I am paying and this is income that's being accrued from Kenya when I'm getting a training from the Netherlands as I'm sitting in my house? But even more is that I might have a coach, yeah? Like an individual is not even a university. Who tells you we can chat over Zoom or Skype? Someone tells you we can chat over Zoom and Skype and this is my charges per hour. How would this be detected and taxed? So in short, what I'm saying is that over the period of these 9 years, the complexities it has become more and more and more complex on the topic of taxing the digital economy. So when I was starting out doing my research, my point where I began was the African countries through the African Union, they need to come together and come up with rules, come up with one-stop shop where if you're going to come into Africa as a digital business or of whichever nature, you'll be required to have a registration. And this registration should be centralized. And then this would help first in administration in the sense that where Kenya may not have information of Netflix or may not or where they hold their bank accounts or may not be able to enforce, Netflix might have an office in South Africa. So if there is like a one-stop shop, what happens is that Kenya is able through the help of the assistance of South Africa Revenue Service to be able to enforce against Netflix to pay income which they can trace back to Kenya. So that was my beginning point. What I thought also is that if there was a point at which Nigeria had banned Twitter, yeah, then X now. And I remember thinking what really is going to happen is that the Nigerian economy is big enough and that's fair, yeah. But with time, when you become too difficult as a small African country, these multinational digital entities, what they're going to do is that they're just going to close down, shut down, and move on to another economy, yeah? And now, of course, also even the people in that country are able to use the VPNs and access these platforms anyway, even if they're banned from that country. But I was thinking, once if you are speaking one voice as African countries, then you are able even to almost stop these digital entities from bullying you. But come to think about it, like the United States, it doesn't matter how much they have tried to regulate and control, like Facebook, X, it really keeps slipping their hands. Because if you see like how many committees, you know, like trying to interview like the CEOs of the digital platforms and allegations of interference with elections and all this, it just always feels like these digital platforms are one step ahead. Just when you think you're going to hold them and grab them, they do something and just evolves and morphs into something else. So, and it's because of that that then I also thought, you know, it may actually benefit Africa not to go through the African Union, but they need also to be involved in global conversation. Because the economies right now are so interlinked globally, like what I'm saying about like use of VPNs and multinationals operating in ways that are morphing, and they're morphing globally, that I think it would benefit for Africa to actually be very well involved and be very well informed through the international platforms that are discussing issues of tackling the digital economy. So this is like the OECD, this is like the UN Tax Committee, this is like knowing what's happening with the with the European Union. And more so, there are two, the OECD gave two solutions, two pillars, not I keep saying solutions, but two pillars for tackling the digital economy. There's pillar one and pillar two. Pillar one has to deal with entities which are proposed to fall within certain rules, but if you fall within those rules as an entity, then what happens is that there will be certain formulas for allocation of any profits that you make from countries where you are operating. So they are called market jurisdictions. Quite complicated language, but simply is that if Google is making a certain amount of profit per year and a certain amount of revenue in addition to the profit, then they fall within the scope of the pillar one. And if they fall within the scope, then countries which they are earning revenue from, let's say for instance Kenya, if Google is accruing or earning revenues of a certain amount from Kenya, then Kenya will be entitled to share in the global profits of Google. It's quite complex how the competition will be done and all those things, but that's the logic of it. And then the pillar two would deal with like there's a minimum global tax, so which is 15%. If Google is earning income from Kenya and that income you can trace it and see it's not being taxed anywhere, then there's a global minimum tax that they should pay. And so it goes. And to begin with, for me, when you read the rules, to be fair, to be honest, is I don't think they are favoring African countries. One, because the economies are so small, and if you're told you're not participating in sharing the profits of these multinationals because the revenues they're earning from you are not big, then you'll be disadvantaged, because what is not big in the global scale might be big for you. So let's take a country like Djibouti. Google might be earning what would be considered globally as a small amount compared to what Google is making from the UK, for instance. But that revenue that is being earned from Djibouti and not being taxed could help the economy of Djibouti. So thinking about it in that way, in my view, I just thought these rules are really not pro-Africa. And I will have to note that Kenya do not sign onto those solutions of the OECD. It reserved itself from signing, and so had Nigeria. But I know like the two countries are being pursued to join into it, because of course, as an African country wanting to, you know, like have a mind of your own, I mean, the honest truth is that no one will have any of it. But I also think it's not a lost cause. I think participating in the global conversation is really important. It might also help to join onto these solutions that are being offered. One, because there's global, I think, almost support, and these are the rules that this multinational should act by. Of course, as I said, they look for ways of escaping it, and it's likely that they will morph and you may not fully be able to tax them. But at least with these global rules, you have something to fall back on and to be able to enforce and you know, to take action against these entities that will not be complying. But also, because the economies are so intertwined right now that the things that I'm using, the software that I'm using to record this podcast, that will be used to edit, where I'll post it, they are all global platforms. Like if I decide to post it on YouTube, can post it on Spotify and anywhere else. What happens is that even if it's coming from an African country, now we have a platform where you can literally just have access and share your content so far. So that's why I thought to begin with, maybe we should be inward looking. But with time, as I'm doing my research, I'm thinking, you know what, it doesn't hurt to open up a bit and try to also benefit from the solutions that are being offered globally. Also, the other reason is because these solutions are really well researched and well thought out. They may not be benefiting you, but the knowledge and the research that has gone behind it, I think it could be a basis for you to start off in targeting these digital solutions. Like, in fact, if you look at like the digital service tax, how the UK is charging it, then they're so narrow in the type of business models that they're targeting, which is the search engines, the social media platforms, unlike the Kenya digital service tax, which seems to be like reaching out to anyone, anything, including online classes and anyone who has access, who has an IP address registered to Kenya, and it goes far and wide. And when you sit down and you see the research and the policy documents they use, when you look at the research documents that the UK use, you can see there's some benefit to looking at some of these rules, because I think narrowing down to your target might be more beneficial than just reaching out to try and tax every single digital model there is. Also because it's difficult to really like narrow down, you know, because there's so many changes that are happening, you know. It was, you're targeting like an online class, then it will turn to be an online class where you pay, you now can pay using cryptocurrency. So now what happens to that? The Nigeria is trying to use the banks and saying every bank should like take note of everyone who is paying for digital services, you know, like Netflix and YouTube, and charge a tax on it. But what happens if these businesses decide you can pay using some kind of cryptocurrency or other way, so you bypass the bank, you know. So there's so much. And that's why I have gotten to the point where I'm saying that it might benefit to participate in these global conversations as African countries. But to say also, it's not like there's a global tax rule or a global tax lawmaker. The OECD, really what they give are guidelines. Even the UN, what they give are guidelines. Ultimately, it's for individual countries in the sovereign states to be able to make their own laws. But although that's the case, is what is like accepted international guidelines, you know, and it will be beneficial to make use of them. So for today, that's all I wanted to share in terms of like the whole topic of taxing the digital economy within Africa. You can leave your comments and share your thoughts, and I hope you found this interesting and beneficial to you. Goodbye for now.